looks pretty busy.
I was just going to say, there's a lot of bustle. A lot of traffic and people walking on the streets.
We're in the car downtown at lunchtime, looking for a place to park.
We might have difficulty. We'll see.
We're replicating an experiment we conducted 2 years ago for a show about parking in the crossroads. See, we'd heard that there was a real crunch, especially at lunchtime, but actually, our producers pulled right up to an empty space in front of the restaurant on their first try. That was then. This is now.
We're going to Tannen Wine Bar, which I believe is at 16th and Walnut. We're going to start the timer now. So Tannen is on the corner there, so let's see if there's anything up front or on this side. I guess that's a spot there. But we'll drive closer.
Yeah, we'll drive past the front door first.
Yeah.
And then we'll circle back around. I think that's a good tactic.
Yes. Well, you know, I mean, I think there's parking right here in that lot. Parking only. So.
I think you're right.
Tannen parking only.
What do you know?
I do not know how my producers keep lucking out like this. I've definitely done my fair share of circling for a parking spot in the crossroads. So someone really needs to do a more scientific version of this experiment. Anyway, as you may have guessed, we're talking about parking downtown and beyond on KCUR's Central Standard from Westport to the City Market. Call 816-235-2888 to tell us how parking, or the lack thereof, shapes your daily life in Kansas City. If you could call the shots, would you make any changes, build a lot, install parking meters, tell everyone to shut up and ride a bike? 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman, and Thomas Moorfield is with us from Bike Walk KC. He's also a downtown resident, if you count Columbus Park, which I personally do. Thomas, did you used to have a blog that dealt very thoroughly with parking, or am I imagining that?
I do. I have a blog, urbanangle.net, where I opine about all sorts of things related to cities and urban planning and
parking. But like parking a lot of the time?
Sometimes parking, because parking, I think, affects a lot about how a city works. It's about how we decide to grow and develop, or how we decide to move around, or, you know, decisions we make with how we use our public spaces and our streets. And so it does tie into a lot of things that are important to people who care about cities and what we're making them in the future.
One of your headlines from days gone by that just sticks with me, I mean, I think this headline kind of runs through my mind when I go to the City Market, is the City Market is many things, but mostly parking.
That's right. And it's less so today than it was a couple years ago. So with the opening of the streetcar and a lot of other good things that are happening downtown, we're seeing new development. We're seeing some of those surface lots develop into new apartments and offices and other things. But there is still a lot of parking down there, and there is still a lot of conversations about parking in the River Market and how it works.
A lot of people would say a lot of parking is a good thing. Like mostly people looking for a parking spot would say that.
Right. Well, I think the question is about transportation choices. So right now, the River Market is probably busier than it's ever been. And there's a lot of people who want to go to the River Market who are used to driving right up to the market and parking there. And that's not as easy as it used to be. And so the city's facing some decisions about whether we respond to that by investing in new expensive parking structures, or do we sort of build on the momentum of the streetcar and everything that downtown's doing to provide some other ways that people can move around.
You just hinted at one of the drawbacks of a parking structure, if we're weighing pros and cons between those options, being the expense. What are some other disadvantages to a parking structure?
Well, if you think about a neighborhood and what makes it a place that you want to be, you're looking for a place with activity. And parking structures at the end of the day are storing cars. And so that's a place that is not providing an office for a new high-wage employee. It's not providing an apartment for someone who wants to move downtown. It's not providing a restaurant or a cafe seating. It's not providing economic value to the place, and it's not bringing people there. And so there's choices to make about the types of neighborhoods we want, and parking can impact that.
I guess when you're talking right now, I'm picturing like famous photographs of urban landscapes that everyone finds so charming, or like the watercolor of the street scene in Paris or something, with all the people sitting outdoors at the cafe and someone walking a dog right by or whatever, you know what I mean? None of those photographs depict parking garages.
Right. I think the places that are most beloved to people across the country and across the world are not known for their parking abundance, right? They're known for other things. And so I think it's a good problem that we have, that people are struggling to find parking, because that means we have places where people want to go. But we should think very carefully about the decisions we make with our infrastructure so that they continue to be desirable places.
You mentioned some of the change that's come to the city market in the last couple of years since we talked. What about other parts of our urban landscape? Have you seen changes beyond the city market?
Well, I think so. There's a lot going on with parking right now. So, you know, both the River Market and the Crossroads have parking studies that are ongoing, where the city's looking strategically about you know, how to manage the parking that's out there. There's new paid parking experiments underway in Westport. The city has a new transit-oriented development policy that's looking at how to better integrate parking when it needs to be built in different parts of the city. And there's a lot of concerns about parking and traffic as new development and density comes to areas like the Plaza and Westport.
So we'll get back to a lot of those, but when you think about how parking figures into the city we're building, the city we're all going to end up living in 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, can you give me your own personal, like not even thinking urban planner, but just you as a human being living in this city, your best and worst case scenarios?
Well, you know, we're thinking about building parking garages and parking infrastructure today, and that'll last us 50, 60, 70 years. And it's possible in 10 or 15 years, cars will be driving themselves. We won't need to store them where we're going, right? So I could see one future, and that's not too distant, where everything that we think we understand about where we store our vehicles and what that means for our city is going to change. What I hope that the city and the region can do is begin to, you know, think more strategically about these parking issues, understand how they relate to how affordable our housing is, or how easy it is for us to get to jobs, you know, in transit or walking and biking. And at the end of the day, have choices that work for everyone, including people who drive and park.
Can you give me, I mean, I don't know if I've really heard the best and worst case scenario there. I mean, I want your hopes, your fears. Lay it all out for me.
I think the worst case scenario is that we invest millions of dollars in parking infrastructure that doesn't serve us well, that at the end of the day degrades the quality of life in our communities. The best case scenario is that we think we're able to plan for a future that is thinking about new technologies, new transportation choices, and provides good choices for everyone.
Well, I'm going to get to a couple of our callers at 816-235-2888, and then we've got someone from the city manager's office who's going to weigh in on some of this. Let's hear from Mark in Lee's Summit. Hi, Mark.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. How about you?
Doing good. I'm a Metro bus driver, and part of my route goes downtown during rush hour. And, I mean, the traffic is just terrible to begin with. And the parking situation is, you know, people are streaming out of the parking lots to go home. And there's only one or two people in the car. And, I mean, there's much easier. I mean, I would never take my car downtown to park because, you know, it's hard to find them, and the cost is terrible. And, you know, there's like either take the bus or the, like you said, the streetcar. You know, there's park and ride lots that people can park far away from downtown and then, you know, ride the bus into the city. And I just don't understand why more people don't do that.
Mark, as a city bus driver, you kind of, I don't know, you probably traverse the city really differently than most of us. We go from point A to point B and then we stay there, and you kind of make that journey throughout the day. And I'm wondering if there are any other ways that you've observed parking in Kansas City from that vantage point.
Well, like I said, there's I mean, one of my routes is up north to Boardwalk and Zona Rosa, and I have a lot of people that park up there in the park and ride lot and then ride downtown to their jobs and then, you know, go home. And you know, I just think that's the situation of driving your car into downtown to find a parking place. And, you know, I don't know how much these parking lots cost downtown, but, you know, I would say they're $50 to $75 a month to do that, plus gas and wear and tear in your car, where you could buy a monthly pass on the Metro for $50 and save the wear and tear and don't have to worry about, you know, fighting the traffic at all.
Yeah. And, well, Mark, thank you so much for calling us. That I want to get back to that idea, Thomas, because it seems like, you know, I would say my own personal parking rant for years was that the last thing we would want to do as cities, like city neighborhoods, like the Crossroads, get more active is build more parking lots or create more parking, because as long as it is more convenient to drive, there's going to be very little incentive to walk or use public transit. And I'm wondering about that relationship between abundant parking and robust public transit.
Right. So when cities require parking in their development codes as part of a development project, or when cities devote spaces on their public streets to parking, they're really subsidizing and incenting parking in a way that distorts people's regular rational economic decisions about how they move around. And so you can imagine someone who may live near where they work and be able to walk and bike there, but is still paying in their rent for the parking space that building was required to buy or required to build, you know, by the code when they were developed. So I think you're right that these decisions about building parking have an impact on the choices people make. And if we want to have healthier cities, we should look carefully at what we're incenting and how, so that everything's on a level playing field.
You know, I guess I'm wondering if it's maybe easy for us to sit here and decry more parking when we're comfortably in our studio right now and not operating a business that might possibly be losing customers because there's a parking crunch out front.
Well, you know, businesses, you're right, businesses need customers. And so if you think about what is the best way to get as many customers in your door as possible, it doesn't matter whether they're walking down the sidewalk or arriving in the streetcar or parking their car, but you want to make decisions that support as many customers as possible. And sometimes that's more parking, and sometimes that's looking at other opportunities for ways to move around.
When KCUR's Central Standard returns, we want to know what you're seeing out there where the rubber meets the road. Call 816-235-2888 with your Kansas City parking rant or rave. Maybe you really enjoy parking. Kind of hard to imagine, but who's to say? I'm Gina Kaufman. We'll be right back. I'm Gina Kaufman. Welcome back to KCUR's Central Standard. We are talking about the parking situation in Kansas City's most vibrant neighborhoods. Call 816-235-2888 to participate. We've been hearing from Thomas Moorfield of Bike Walk KC. He's also a Columbus Park resident, so he has some lived experience traversing downtown on the day-to-day. I want to bring Rick Usher in on the conversation with us. Rick is with us from the city manager's office. Hi, Rick.
Good morning.
So we heard just a moment ago from a bus driver who had some advice for people that they should just park their car and take the bus into downtown, that he doesn't even understand why anyone would approach it differently. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I certainly agree. I mean, I work downtown. I've been with the city for quite a number of years, but the first 11 years I worked for City Hall, I rode the bus. We lived south of the plaza. It was a 20-minute ride. When it would snow and everybody was late, I would actually be the first person there because I got out, hit the bus, and the buses made it into work. So a lot of employers, including City Hall, provide their employees with discounted bus passes. There are thousands of employees who work downtown who would depend on KCATA to get to work. So interesting that he says parking is terrible downtown, because it's a double-edged sword. It shows that we have the economic activity that's growing. I feel like from what Thomas is saying, we're in a state of transition on really what the solutions are going to be for parking and transit in Kansas City.
Get us up to speed on parking in Kansas City right now. It feels like the parking situation has gotten more intense since the last time we talked. But is there any concrete evidence for or against that?
There's pressure because of the economic activity around the streetcar. We've been tracking new construction, rehabilitation, new businesses moving downtown, residential growth since 2012 when voters approved the streetcar expansion. And, you know, you've seen the numbers. It's well over $1 billion in development activity. And there are a number of factors drawing people downtown. You go back, 20 years ago to when, we were looking at increasing residential uses downtown. So that's pulling more people downtown. There's more activity. We've actually had to create a event traffic management committee that was implemented in 2007 when Sprint Center and Power Light District opened to bring everybody together downtown on how to manage everybody coming downtown.
There have been studies in the Crossroads, in the City Market. Can you tell us what those studies tell us?
The studies, tell us that I think it's this indication of a transition, that there are people who move their businesses to River Market, to Crossroads 30 years ago, 20 years ago even, because of the accessibility, because there was free and abundant on-street parking, maybe available parking lots. So
that's really the reason they moved there. It was not because of the charming aesthetic or the artsy vibe, like just really like parking factored hugely into those business decisions to be in the Crossroads.
Initially, those businesses were looking for the cheapest place to go. So, Crossroads emerged as a, through the art community. And, there are, I don't want to name names, but people who, as downtown was redeveloping, were saying, hey, this is not good. We moved down here because it was quiet. And a lot of folks calling about, just issues that are happening at night that are things that happen when you live in a city. So, there's a lot of transition going on. But we are seeing more and more people that are moving downtown because they don't want to own a car. They walk to work. I've got neighbors on my street who are using Zipcar. They don't own a car. They said, hey, we took the Zipcar out to IKEA last week, and they don't need the car.
But what about those studies? So the Crossroads study we've kind of hit on. What about the City Market study?
Well, the City Market is, I think, more of the between River Market and Crossroads. River Market is likely the more close to hitting capacity of development. I don't know if you might agree on that, Thomas, but there's more development opportunity still in Crossroads, so there's still kind of an open feeling to the neighborhood on Market Saturdays. Though, the best way to get in is on the streetcar. The best way to get in is to walk or to bike or to, you know, use the free lot that we've set up. I don't necessarily agree that it should be free, but we're also seeing residents' habits changing. I've got a neighbor in the West Side neighborhood. She and her husband walk from Summit down to Main Street, catch the streetcar, go into the market, make a morning of it, come home on the streetcar, walk back up, you know, to the West Side. And I would say they're probably in their late 60s, early 70s. And they're really excited about the streetcar.
Let's talk to Jake, who is calling from the City Market. Hi, Jake.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Good. How about you?
Not too bad.
What do you want to tell us?
Yeah, so I live in the City Market, guys. I moved up here from Atlanta, Georgia, about 3 years ago. And I love the City Market. Awesome neighborhood right on the edge of the city. Perfect place. Kind of walk my dog, and it's got a great walking feel. Got a good neighborhood feel. Saturdays and Sundays are a lot different. About 3 years ago, when I first moved up here, it was kind of a joke. Hey, don't leave your parking spot, or else you'll never find one. And today, that couldn't be more true. I love getting up early on Saturdays, walk my dog, try to get some errands run. But if you've got to move your car anywhere, it's almost like don't move it until about 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock when things start to die down. So that's kind of been my experience with everything.
Jake,
I heard the city manager talking about. Go ahead.
I just want to ask you, you're coming from Atlanta, Georgia. How does this compare to the situation there? I mean, this is unfamiliar to Kansas Cityans, what you're describing. We're used to free, easy parking. We're used to parking, you know, we're used to being able to drive just a couple of blocks rather than walking a couple of blocks, go from parking spot to parking spot. But you're coming from another city. I don't know what the situation is in Atlanta. I'm just a little more surprised to hear an out-of-towner being surprised that there are hours when you don't want to bother moving your car in the heart of the city.
Yeah, and with Atlanta, you have to drive everywhere, so you've got to park everywhere. Our infrastructure as far as public transportation is not good. So you're parking everywhere, and it's almost set up that way. So it is kind of funny. That was normal to me, but the distances I was traveling were, you know, 30, 45 minutes, you know, from different parts of the city. Here, what I noticed, it's a very walking-friendly area. I barely use a streetcar. I'm right off the streetcar stop. I can walk faster than most of the streetcar stops actually get to, but it is kind of goofy. When I first moved up there, it wasn't as big a deal. It was, you know, I could always find a parking spot. I didn't really have to think about it. But now it's literally Saturdays, Sundays not so much, but Saturdays it's just goofy. It's just a little neighborhood and it's very popular, so it makes perfect sense.
Well, thanks for calling, Jake. I want to bring someone in on this discussion. We've got Matt Staub with us, and Matt, you are part of a committee. You're the chair of the city's Parking and Transportation Commission, I should say. What do you hear in what Jake is telling us?
I think the most interesting thing that he said was really telling, that it was set up that way when he talked about his experience in Atlanta. And I think that speaks to a lot of what Thomas is saying, that the way we build it drives a lot of choices. And if we build it so people are incentivized to drive to the front door, that's what they'll do. So what we're trying to do speaks to exactly what Thomas was talking about. We're trying to balance those choices so that regardless of whether you want to walk, bike, take transit, or drive, that all of those choices have a fighting chance against each other, right? That right now, if we build it to be too convenient to drive, it not only makes it more difficult, but it undermines those other choices. So that's a lot of things we're trying to work on, and it's a balancing game. Our job in this commission is to look at all the different constituencies, look at our vision for the future, but also the practical realities of today. People are still going to drive. We want to make it easy for them to drive, relatively speaking. We want to reflect some of the costs that the city bears for that, and kind of get that all balanced and move us slowly into the future without being too painful in the process.
You know, in 2015, when I talked to some of these other guys in the room, land use in the Crossroads was 50% surface parking, and there was a pretty high percentage in the River Market as well. So, like, that means that of all the square footage in those areas, just a huge amount of the land was taken up by parked cars as opposed to galleries or restaurants or offices or apartments, which we found surprising because there was already at that point so much frustration over what felt like not enough parking. One of the predictions that we heard was that that surface parking was going to be developed upon, built upon, because as commercially those areas became more desirable, people just wouldn't stand for that sitting inactive in that way. We heard from Thomas that that has happened somewhat in the River Market, that there has been some building on the surface lots.
Yeah, I think I can think of off the top of my head three large lots that have been infilled with really impressive new rental properties or businesses or mixed-use buildings that are full of tax-paying uses and e-tax-paying residents. So it's a really good thing, but it is a challenge for people, particularly who had habits of going to particular lots and knew exactly where they're going. But we do know from the River Market parking study that there's still a surplus of parking. It's just the economic incentives have not been there yet for us to balance it. A lot of it is dedicated to one use. It's only used during the day or only used at night. So we're working really hard to coordinate between different landowners and uses to say, how can we get the most out of what's left of it, of which there is still more than our parking studies tell us we need. It's just maybe in the wrong places or people don't know about it.
So like shoppers or employees use a lot during the day, apartment dwellers use it at night, that kind of thing?
Exactly. So my building is a great example. Our lot is, it's a residential dedicated lot. It's empty during the day when most of the people, about a third of the people, maybe use other means, but the other two thirds drive to work. And so those two thirds of spaces are just empty all day when the employees need that. And we're just now learning, because we didn't have the structures, because we really didn't need them, to say, how can we use it during the day for employees, at night for residents, and really balance that and get the most out of it so we're not building parking lots for every single use as if we're a strip mall.
Let's talk to Kevin. Kevin's calling from downtown Kansas City. Hi, Kevin.
Hello there. How are you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for joining us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm a business owner in the Crossroads, in the Power and Light District, actually. And I had another business up in the Northland before. I mean, actually, I had both of them. But anyways, the whole issue of parking is more about perception than it is reality. Most people, if there isn't a place to park right in front of your store or right in front of the restaurant that they want to go to, then there's a parking problem. And it's really kind of a sad state of our society right now that people are not willing to park and walk a few blocks, because that would relieve most all the issues. We had the same issues in the suburban area where I was at, where people said there's not enough parking. It's the same exact issue. So my feelings are that, first of all, yes, I do support the streetcar. I think it's great. Yes, we do need to have parking, but we don't need to specifically have parking right the location that everybody thinks it should be, because there's parking all over the city. The things that I notice, that whenever there's a major event downtown, everybody tries to go to the Cosentino's parking lot, even though there are parking lots every other block. I mean, every block. It's just that they don't realize that there are other locations to park because they're not familiar with downtown. So I think restricting parking is a benefit. I do support limiting the amount of parking, or put your parking underground, or put it underneath a structure that's being built, kind of like they're doing with Two Light right now. So it's a complicated issue, and there's a lot that's involved in it. Most people don't realize that most of the parking lots are owned by the city, and that the city generates revenue off of them. So I think there's a kind of a conflict of interest there between the city and the revenues generated off of parking and putting money into mass transportation.
Let's go ahead and get some response to that last point. First of all, Rick Usher from the city manager's office, is it the case that the city owns a lot of the parking lots?
We own the garages in the Power and Light District. We own the Auditorium Plaza Garage and Barney Ellis Plaza, the Arts District Garage. We're in no way trying to discourage other transit options in order to maximize the use of those garages. We are, and we do have a website, I think if you look at kcmo.gov/parking, where you can find out about all the parking garages downtown and then the mobile apps that we have for reserving spaces. But our transit policies are much more broad than trying to maximize parking. What you'll see that's come out of these studies is the need to regulate and charge for on-street parking. So back to Jake, who, you know, is worried about moving his car. Well, he's parking on the street. And this is one of these transitions that we're seeing people go through. If you're a resident or an employee, business owner, the planning that has been going on in the discussion in the Parking Transportation Commission and in these studies is to drive those users to off-street parking and open up the on-street parking for customers of the businesses and others that are making short-term visits into the neighborhood.
There are a couple of other things that Kevin brought up that I want to sort of draw out and get some response to. One is event parking versus day-to-day parking needs, which in a place like the Crossroads can come up. It comes up in Westport. It comes up in the City Market. When there's something big going on, it seems like the demand for parking changes. I mean, you could even treat Saturday morning as an event for the Crossroads.
Yes.
Excuse me, for the River Market. Can you talk to me about how you juggle the needs during a special event with the needs every day?
Well, you're absolutely right. During events, downtown parking is at a premium. And the idea that, you know, people won't walk is really not the case during large events at Sprint Center, at Power and Light, at Municipal Auditorium. And what's really been interesting to see is the rates of parking as you get further away from, say, Sprint Center. And I've seen $20 parking spaces as far south as 20th Street for some events. And that's really the market understanding what's happening now with parking demand downtown. Employees know these events are happening, so maybe they're taking transit, maybe they're coming earlier. And their spaces, they're paying for those in garages, so it's not necessarily impacting employees as much as it might be somebody who doesn't know these events are happening and goes down and tries to find a parking space. But it's back to that event traffic management group that I was discussing. You know, we work closely with the Downtown Council, with other organizations, to get the word out on where parking is available free and cheaply, mainly where people can go to park. But the walking, you know, is happening. When Sprint Center was being constructed, there's no parking garage associated with Sprint Center specifically. It's shared with Power and Light. There were a lot of people that weren't happy about that. We overlaid an aerial photo of Arrowhead Stadium on Sprint Center, and from some of the lots, you're walking from like Sean's house over at 18th and Jefferson to get to Sprint Center when you overlay that topography of Arrowhead on that. So people are walking and will walk, and it's based on what they're willing to pay for parking.
You know, something else that I kind of latched onto and what Kevin was talking to us about is the difference between perception and reality. And he says that, you know, people out there perceive that there's not enough parking and that that's not accurate. Matt Staub, I want to start with you on this. When we frame parking as a supply issue, like if people are feeling a parking crunch, the first assumption is, well, clearly there just aren't enough spots. Is that always the case, or can there be something else at hand other than a supply issue?
No, it's actually definitely not the case. We have a tremendous amount of parking, except maybe for some of the exceptional events, like if the Royals win the World Series every year. But one of the challenges we have is balancing that so we have a really vibrant neighborhood that we can live on an average Tuesday and not build it for that event. But it's not necessarily the case that there's not enough parking. It may be, like Keith's point, that it's not right out front. And I think part of the challenge is it is when we have those events, not only an influx of people, but an influx of people that aren't familiar with A, the neighborhood and how to navigate it, and B, just urban parking in general. And I think a lot of it is, you know, I'm going to the Sprint Center tonight for a Garth Brooks concert. I'm going to type Sprint Center in my GPS, and it's going to take me right to the front door of the Sprint Center with 80,000 of my neighbors, or I guess 30,000 of my neighbors, and then we'll all figure it out from there. And so it does take a little bit of pre-planning to look and say, over on Oak Street, that garage is always half full, and it's never as expensive. You know, there are amazing options. So I encourage people when they come downtown to look to the perimeters. You're walking just a few blocks, and you're not only walking to the comparison that Rick had, just a few blocks and not even close to what you walk at Arrowhead, but you're walking through a really pleasant urban environment with other people around and things to see. So it is just a changing that paradigm to say, okay, I just need to find some place to store my car in, you know, a 5-block radius. I can use the streetcar to connect. That's one of the value props that we had for the streetcar, is that it opens up these different parking supply opportunities along the route. So you can park on one end and come to an event in the middle. You don't have to park next to it. It extends people's range throughout downtown. So there's a lot of options. It just does take a little bit of maybe pre-planning when you come downtown.
But we are also talking about a shift in mindset that has to accompany all of this. I mean, I don't want to say that I'm above it either. I mean, I can sit here and tell you how much I value a dense urban place over abundant parking. And then I can get in my car and be really annoyed that I can't park somewhere. And sometimes even give up on the place I was trying to go because I just don't have time to keep at it. This is clearly my own mindset problem. Like, if I want to live in a city, I've got to operate differently. But that hasn't been Kansas City's history. So can you talk to me a little bit about what it really means to shift a mindset, how that really happens in a place where people have become accustomed to certain things?
Yeah, I think I just saw somebody on Twitter say it's a chicken and egg problem when it comes to alternative transportation, because until it's convenient or competitive, it's not a great choice to use it, because you are making a little bit of a sacrifice if it's a little slower to take the bus, or if walking is unpleasant because you're walking by a bunch of parking lots and a bunch of traffic, you don't want to do it. But until we try to balance that a little bit, it's not so great. So that's part of the paradigm shift. And we're also trying to make it easy on you by clearing off street spaces. So if you need to run into a place, there's a spot there for you, by being more strategic about the parking we do have in the meantime.
Well, we're in a room full of people who think about parking a lot. What about you, who are out there actually trying to park a lot? 816-235-2888. Tell us your story. I'm Gina Kaufman, KCUR's Central Standard. We'll be right back. Welcome back to KCUR Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, talking about parking in Kansas City's most vibrant urban neighborhoods with Thomas Moorfield of Bike Walk KC, Rick Usher with the City Manager's Office, and Matt Staub, who's the chair of the city's Parking and Transportation Commission. Hi again, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
We also have Sean O'Byrne with us. He's Vice President of Business Development for Downtown KC.
Good morning, Sean. Good morning.
So I want to talk to you about a sort of business commercial perspective, but we're going to bring in a caller to help us with that. Calvin is calling from Overland Park. Hi, Calvin.
Hi, Gina. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Great. Great.
What do you want to tell us?
Well, yeah. So I own Freshwater Restaurant, which was formerly at 37th and Traffic Way. And in our search for relocation, you know, we've looked at probably 1,000 different restaurant sites. And we talked a lot about going to the crossroads, and I enjoy, you know, the neighborhood a lot. But it seemed to be the issue with every site we looked at there was parking. And, you know, you can, the issue of perception versus reality, you know, I can recognize is true. But that doesn't help with the fact that the perception still exists.
And yeah, and you need your customers.
Yeah, exactly. Then their perception is all that really matters.
Well, Sean, take that on for me.
Well, you're right about the perception aspect of it, and I think it's going to change with education, and especially when you talk about the crossroads. When you think about that, that's low-rise manufacturing that was built at the turn of the century with zero parking because all of the manufacturer workers rode the streetcar in. And as it changes and the change in the dynamic to these restaurants and galleries, those are going to put different pressures on the parking. one of the great advantages in the Crossroads area, of course, is the streetcar. So when you talk about the availability of parking, you've gone from, as you stated a little bit earlier, that you might get upset because there's nowhere to park. I would say that you probably got upset because there's nowhere to park near where you're going. You have mile either direction that you can park and ride that streetcar and get off at a stop and go to those restaurants. So we've also got to look at it in the change, in especially in the Crossroads, which was a light manufacturing area. Now it's shops, it's restaurants, it's galleries, it's residential. And each one of those areas have their own parking demands. And there's not a one-fit solution for all of it. The popularity and the density of that Crossroads area with other restaurants, I think, drives the decision-making as far as where you're going to, if you're going to place your restaurant there, because you are going to have such density. People are going to walk several different areas to get to your particular restaurant. The pressures may be there, but the advantages far outweigh the disadvantages.
Have you heard the conversation change in the past few years when you're talking to business owners and people just in the business community about, I don't know, best practices when it comes to the relationship between parking and commerce?
Without a doubt. And the city's doing a wonderful job.
But wait, tell me how that conversation is changing.
Well, the conversation is that we have to change the way we think about parking. And we have to think about it as a municipality and as a business owner and a user. And that means that we have to look at alternative park or alternative systems like Matt was talking about. For an event, I wouldn't drive downtown for and I live downtown, but I wouldn't drive downtown to an event. I would take an Uber or a cab or any other situation, any other venue to get there. That's an education side of it. On the commerce side of it, we have to change the way that people are using. The city had two-hour parking in particular areas. Some areas, the Crossroads, want 3 hours so that people can dine more. But that three-hour doesn't really work for a residential person. It certainly doesn't work for employee parking. It should be pushed into the garages, as Rick mentioned. But the city is doing a wonderful job in taking a really holistic view on that and changing it for this new century.
Let's talk to Carol, who it sounds like might have something to chime in on what you just said. Carol, join, please share your thoughts with us.
Hi, good morning. He took the words right out of my mouth. I live in West Plaza. I have a lot of people who stay with me because I do Airbnb. Everybody takes Uber now because they don't, A, want to take their car, especially if they are going to have a couple of drinks. It's very dangerous. And two, because it's cheaper and easier than driving around for 2 hours looking for a parking space. And in case we think it's expensive here, go to an event in Chicago where I have been with my son-in-law and watched him pay $70 to park for an event. So we get off pretty cheaply here. And Uber is such a cheap alternative to parking. I think everybody should consider another. I'm not just advocating for Uber, but it definitely definitely is a good solution.
Or whatever service you would want to use to not be driving your own car. When Carol makes this comparison with Chicago, you hear people in Kansas City talking about wanting to be more like some of these other cities in so many ways. Are we willing to take those increases in parking costs and things like that?
Well, I think we're going to have that realization. As Rick mentioned, there's $1 billion worth of investment going on the streetcar line right now. There is another $1 billion in the pipeline right behind it. We have 26,000 residents right now. By the end of 2020, we'll have 30, and by 2027, probably 40,000 residents downtown. So that change in that dynamic is going to happen. We need to start thinking both on a municipality level and as a user level on how we weren't or how we're going to change that dynamic on both the parking and the utilization of the spaces downtown.
Let's talk to Chris in Kansas City. Hi, Chris.
Hi, I'll try to keep it short. I know you're running out of time. Great show. After 4 decades of service to other people, which required 4 knee replacements, a shattered hip replacement, I'm pretty much slowed down and disabled, though I do try to get out. There is no parking in this city. There's not enough handicap accessible parking. When you do find it, people who aren't disabled are using it. I mean, this city is shut off completely to the disabled population. I can't imagine for a minute that they are the ADA or ACA compliant in this town. I mean, it's abhorrent. And then on Westport Road at rush hour, you got cars parking there illegally, which back up the traffic all the way to the traffic way. I live here by KU Med. And I called multiple times. The city doesn't enforce the traffic laws they need to enforce. But if you're disabled and trying to park somewhere, they'll immediately give you an $85 ticket. I mean, this town's a mess. I appreciate what you're saying for the able-bodied population, being able to walk. I used to do it, but it's just, there's a much bigger mess here than anyone's talking about. So thank you very much.
Chris, thank you for that call. I'm curious, Matt, when you're working and having conversations with the city's Parking and Transportation Commission, does, like, able-bodiedness come up?
Absolutely. So part of it is a regulation that says for so many spaces in a certain area, we'll have accommodations for handicapped. And those do exist. I think he highlighted one of the biggest challenges we have, which is the enforcement side. We do have a lot of scofflaws that know that enforcement is a little lax and that they can kind of park wherever they want. And that includes handicapped spaces sometimes. So it's a challenge that I think ends up undermining the policy goals that we have. And it's maybe a reason you can't find those short-term quick parking spaces because they're being used by long-term users. So that is what I heard the most from what he said. But I think there's always other opportunities to use drop-off lanes, loading zones. There's a lot of different regulations we use in different contexts. And the subcommission that Sean and I sit on together actually on a very granular level looks at those individual cases. So there are destinations that he has that he finds are really difficult. We would love to hear more about them so we could address them specifically.
When you talk about the granular level, I mean, something that I've been thinking about is the pedestrian experience in various parts of the city, because when we do talk about a Chicago or a New York or those gorgeous urban photographs where you see people out and about walking, the presence of people on the street is part of what defines an urban place. And I'm curious about whether there's a place in Kansas City where you see something interesting happening with the dynamic between the pedestrian experience and the parking experience. I'm going to start with you, Thomas, because you are here from Bike Walk KC.
Well, I think the issue you raise is really important, recognizing that parking and parking infrastructure affects how people experience a place. And I think we can go back to the city market on a Saturday morning, where you can see, cars on Fifth Street, it's gridlock, for blocks and blocks of people trying to park in the parking lot that's closest to the market. And that means there's tons of pedestrians trying to walk, and they're walking through moving cars, and the streetcar gets stuck, and the buses are, run slow. And it really, it's a microcosm of this entire issue that we have to make choices about, how we're going to move around and how we're going to develop to try and manage these different pieces together.
I want to go to a caller. I'd like to speak with Nancy, who might be dealing in her own way with some of that gridlock you just described in the market coming up. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for taking my call. Everybody who's calling in has got it right on. I really second what the guy from Lee Summit said, the bus driver. I second everything he said. I live in a 12-story high-rise. On the Overland Park campus, and I'm looking at the Kansas City skyline right now, and I can tell you that I won't drive down there. I will not drive down there, and I won't park down there. I'm going to get on the bus in the morning and take a gentleman with me, a disabled gentleman. We're going to walk two blocks. We're going to get the Plaza bus. We're going to get off in the Plaza and take the MAX to the Shepherd Center for a Spanish lesson. Then we're going to get on the MAX again and go downtown and get to 24 and go to the Don Bosco Center, and we're going to dance. And then we're going to go home, and this is all not going to cost us more than $3 each.
Well, thank you, Nancy, for sharing your secret to navigating these what sound like such complex problems, but it sounds like there are creative solutions out there.
Thank you for having me. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I was just curious about your response to the idea of creative solutions.
Yeah, so I'm sitting here thinking about these parking garages that we're designing, that they really, we should be looking at designing them for conversion to residential or commercial use. I'm also thinking about how my car is loafing during the day in a parking garage when I could be putting it to work for me with a mobile app that allows others to rent it and use it while I'm not there.
Well, Rick Usher, Sean O'Byrne, Thomas Moorfield, Matt Staub, this has been fun. Thank you so much for being part of our great parking debate of 2017.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And you can keep talking about this on Twitter. We are at KCURCST. This show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Andrea Tudhope, and Suzanne Hogan, with lots of help from intern Danielle Hogarty. I'm Gina Kaufman. Up to Date is next. Don't miss it.